Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to episode 12 of Hometown Glory. Some sad news. Unfortunately, today's episode of Hometown Glory has been postponed due to a COVID crisis. Well, we say COVID crisis. None of us actually have COVID, although Tom is actually quite poorly, so missing tonight. Some of us are on holiday. Another is serving a 3-episode ban. But we spoke to the podcast board and we got the postponement. This means the episode will probably be re-recorded in a few months' time, likely 24 hours after another really important episode, thus ruining both episodes. We jest, some topical satire for you there. although, sadly, Tom is unwell, so can't be with us. But there is me, Charlie, there's Ash, there's Billy, and there's Rosa. Hello, everyone. Now, of course, there's only one place to start, and that's with the North London Derby that wasn't. It's 48 hours or so after it was called off. So I want to know how we're all feeling about the postponement now. Rosa, you can start. Anything you want to get off your chest about this sorry situation, this is your chance. Go for it.
Yeah, I'm disgusted. I don't want to be like a, you know, ranting Tottenham fan, but I can't believe they were allowed to get away with it. And it was one of those things where when I messaged you guys and I said, is it really like tinfoil of me to suggest that somebody kind of wrote this rule knowing that it would be used in this way? And you said, no, I think the league are genuinely that stupid. And I said, yeah, it is one of those like, don't look for malice when stupidity is like the obvious answer, which is true. But I still, it's again, it's another one of those things like the Southampton game where I just, every time I kind of calm down about it and go, you know, it doesn't really matter, I'm like, I can't believe they've been allowed to get away with it just because they managed their squad horrendously. Like, as I said on Twitter, like, if poor squad management was a reason for postponing games, we would not have played a game since 2018. Fact. And even though it sort of hasn't, it's done us maybe a favour in a way, because we're obviously quite injury struck at the moment, it's just more, it does really feel like the principle of the thing. I feel really, like, I do feel disgusted. I can't believe they've been allowed to get away with it. And I just, like, I know that there's going to be no karmic pushback for it at all. I think that's the thing that is almost making me the most mad, is that I know it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. They've done it. And they will never be made to pay for it ever. Like, the game will be rescheduled on a weeknight where nobody will have had a chance to like enjoy a day with their mates like we would want to at a North London Derby. And it will just be like, if we win, that'll be great. But if we lose, we won't even have had like a nice day out together. So whatever happens will ultimately, they will face no pushback for it. And I think that's the thing that like makes me the most furious.
That's a good start for our rants. Ash, baton over to you. Your turn.
No, I just think Arsenal bottled it. I think obviously they saw who they had out and were just like, we'll just move it to a time of our convenience. And I think that's the most annoying thing, is that we're now going to play it at a time that probably isn't best for us. And we could have had a depleted Arsenal and probably have won at like the first London derby with fans, which would have been amazing. I think the thing that was probably the most annoying is having to listen to Arsenal fans for the past 30 years talk about this amazing academy and all these kids tail end. And then when it comes like time to like actually use them, they don't want to, and have to, we've rescheduled the game. So I'm angry, but I've also calmed down a bit now. And I think that, I don't know, under the lights, I don't know, maybe we'll just win and all will be forgotten for now.
That's what I'm clinging to. And I think, you know, a few of us have said, as Rosa pointed out, you know, Son, Dyer, Romero, perhaps some new signings. You know, we could have like sort of five, even six sort of better players in the 11 that we would have had sort of had we played on Sunday. I think my points, just quickly, is that I guess they, you know, Arsenal, as their fans are very much enjoying telling everyone online, they didn't technically do anything wrong. The new Premier League rules that, yes, were introduced because of potential COVID absences do clearly state that postponements can be granted in the case of, and I looked it all up. So it says players who are unavailable to play through illness or injury, which is a ridiculous thing to put in, because this then opens you up to all sorts of stuff. It also says players listed on the club squad list who are still available to play in the match, including appropriately aged under 21 players, which includes under 21 players who have played for the club, another Premier League or EFL club, or an overseas club in the current season. However, any under 21 player who participates in a club's FA Cup round 3 match and has not played in any other first team competitions for the club this season will not be considered by the board as appropriately experienced. I mean, that is just like a baffling, and sort of speaks to Ash's point about, you know, clubs not having to blood youngsters. The Premier League is sort of bending over backwards to ensure that clubs don't have to play their youngsters, which seems bizarre. And, you know, the other thing, I guess, is that in many ways, I sort of get it. It's a huge fixture. It's potential Champions League qualification and all the accompanying revenue that rides on it at stake. Clubs like Arsenal and Spurs are desperate to get back into the Champions League promised land, so we're going to look for any competitive advantage possible. But I think for me, it's just, if you're an Arsenal fan, you just treat this decision by your club with a bit of humility, surely. You just concede that your club have made this request with slightly cynical motivations. It's okay to admit that. You don't oscillate wildly online between acting like victims because everyone's being mean about the Arsenal, and strange little children who think it's hilarious that you've sort of wound everyone up and triggered everyone. But, you know, I guess that is football sort of supporterdom online in 2022, just winding up other fan bases and blindly defending your club no matter what. Although I do think Spurs fans are a bit different, and we've said this before. I think we treat this stuff with some self-deprecation. I think we call out our club when they're being arseholes. I think we can laugh at ourselves. And I don't think there's that entitlement or spitefulness that I think we've seen in the last couple of days. And that is what has, unfortunately, massively triggered me, which is what they're all fucking laughing at, which is really annoying. Anyway, that's my bit. Billy, you do your bit.
Yeah, I mean, I was really disappointed on a personal level because I was midway through getting my haircut for the game. And when I found out, and I was like, oh, what a waste of time and money this now is. I think it's kind of like reignited my... It's gone a bit dormant though over the last few years, because I kind of feel like I've just sort of seen Arsenal fans like this pathetic like community of people who are more sort of interested in like wearing, you know, retro tracksuits and stuff embroidered with the Adidas logo. And they've sort of lost all that hatred that I had for them. They just sort of like pity them almost. But this has kind of like reignited my hate for them again. And I'm sort of remembering why, like the muscle memory of why they are like easily the worst fan base in the world. Like they're just absolutely pathetic. I think a couple of things that I've noticed is like, one, as you just referred to, calling themselves the Arsenal is the most cringe thing that any fan base does online. It's absolutely pathetic. And it's just like this sort of view that they seem to have that now that they're involved, everyone is complaining about the whole COVID thing. But that's not the reason. It's because you're the only people that have done it with a suspension come into play. It's nothing to do with the Arsenal or anything like that. It's just pathetic. And when you see the Leeds match yesterday, I think they had a 15-year-old on the bench. I think Bielsa's given 8 teenagers debuts this season, which is a Premier League record. So that's how a club who refer to himself with the in front of them should be behaving. Like, you know, wherever they, you know, what are they, what has happened to them this season? Like, the three things that they've celebrated most this season is a loss to Man City, a draw to Liverpool, and getting a game postponed against us. Like, coming from the Wenger era of like being invincible, this is what they've fallen down to. It's just pathetic, really. But it has reignited my absolute hatred of that fan base, which I think is good, really, because it's been a while since I've sort of remembered how much I hate them. But I think like the whole season as a whole, I've just like totally lost interest in it. Really, really excited by Conte still, and you know where we're going to end up. But like, it's just gone to that period now where Man City have won 12 games in a row. The title race is over. We've now got 4 games in hand. Like, it's everything, you know, I think the Burnley game tomorrow has been called as well. It's just getting ridiculous. Like, I don't know where this is going to go now. I mean, how are we going to rearrange 4 Premier League fixtures and it's not going to come back to bite us? Obviously, it is. At first, I thought, you know, when we had 2 games in hand and they were Brighton and Burnley, so you're thinking, right, we can win those easily and, you know, get into the top 4. But now it's going to be a massive pile up, which is going to really bite us in the ass, I think. I'm just a bit pissed off of it already.
I've got one more thing to add, because you are right that they are the most pathetic fan base. Is that somebody like tweeted something similar about like how far they've fallen from the days of like winning the league at White Hart Lane and the Invincibles and all of that. And like an Arsenal fan like quote tweeted it with like, oh, we're living rent-free in your heads. I'm like, that's not an appropriate use of that. Like, you don't live rent-free in our heads. You're our direct rivals. Like, we talk about what you're doing as we're supposed to. Like, you don't get to use that. That's a nonsense.
I think there's been so many poorly used, like, sort of memes. And like, they've just been using like internet language really poorly in the last 48 hours and just like getting everything wrong. And again, just like behaving like just weird children. And I just can't. And it's annoying because, like, you know, we're talking about it and I've definitely been triggered by it because it's so maddening. And I think we all probably have in some ways and all the rest of it. So they are sort of doing what they're supposed to be doing by winding us up in this way. But I just like, I find it so risible. It's just like absolutely pathetic. Like, I don't think I've ever seen anything quite so pathetic. Like, just have some sort of, like, it's okay to just like call your club out every now and again for being like ridiculous, even if it is something to do with your most bitter rival. Like, I think Spurs fans would, if it was the other way around, I think there would be an element of like enjoying seeing Arsenal fans getting all het up. But I also think there'd be a like, why are we being such cowards? Like, come on, Spurs, don't embarrass us like this. I honestly think that would be a response that we would have. Like, don't go running from your local rival. It's humiliating. It's humiliating for us as fans, you know? Whereas they just seem to be, I don't know, it's mad. Billy.
Yeah, I think the moment that it hit home that they've totally lost the plot as a fan base was when I saw that, I think it was an official tweet today that said the Burnley game was postponed, and every single reply was an Arsenal fan saying, oh, so they're allowed to sell Chris Wood and no one mentions it. But when we do that with our loan, it's like, what are you even talking about, mate? Honestly, why are you now beefing like Burnley official postponement tweets? Where have you come from? What is this? Honestly, I've totally lost it with that fan base. Like, what are they doing? They're bringing Chris Wood into the equation, man.
Leave poor Burnley alone. They've just had their like one striker taken from them by the Saudis. Like,
didn't even sell him. It was a release clause anyway. Like.
Yeah, they had no choice. Everything's gone insane. Like, my head has gone. Like, they're right. My head has gone. They have like, I've been spiraled by idiots. It's the rise of the idiots. It's like Nathan Barley.
I said to you guys as well, if we do win that game, I am going to take the next day off work and literally reply single-handedly to every single tweet that has been like, oh, the Arsenal have done it again by getting this game postponed. Literally every single one I will reply to.
I think that's pretty justified. Anything else to talk about? Anything else the Arsenal before we move on? Billy's hands up.
On a positive though, I do actually think it's going to be quite good for us in the long run, because I think all things considered, our players that are missing are much more important to us than the players that are missing to them. Like, I don't think we're not in exactly in the most confident thing after the two Chelsea losses. And without Dyer, Romero and so on, I would have been pretty worried going into that game. So it's really annoying, but I do think in the long term, it's hopefully benefit us.
This was the thing, when I sort of jotted down who they were actually going to be able to put out had the game happened. Like, granted, they had a central midfield crisis, but like, you just know that Ben White would have stepped into midfield and looked like, you know, sort of Declan Rice immediately or whatever. So, you know, and you also know that Saka would have come through had the game actually happened. He would have definitely played, I reckon. And, you know, you're then
also I want Saka to play. Like, it's not a crisis if Shaka's out. Like, we want him in.
Yeah.
And like, one more thing as well is like, the reason I know that we as a fan base would not have reacted the way Arsenal did is because we would know not to gloat, because we would know that that would come back to bite us for sure. And just the fact that they're allowed to kind of float along on this cloud of it's going to be fine. And you know what? It probably will be fine. But had we done it, it wouldn't have been fine. And we would have had the sense to know that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it gives them the advantage for top four now. Like, I really do. Because out, like Billy said, the fixture pileup is going to really hurt us. And I don't know where we're going to squeeze these games in.
We might have to go out of the FA Cup. I was looking before. We do have quite a lot of midweeks, and obviously we're not in Europe, so it's just going to basically mean pretty much like every week we've got a midweek game for quite a long time.
I think we've forgotten though, how much hard work being in Europe is as well. Like, especially like Europa League, Europa Conference. There's like a million games, so like, I'm so glad we're out of it. I didn't want to be in it in the beginning. But there's like double the amount of games you have in Champions League, as far as I can remember. So I think it's still, even if we've got those fixtures to rearrange, it's still going to be less work than if we were in the Conference League, I think.
Yeah, and certainly less travel and all that kind of stuff. And no Thursdays, because hopefully the games will be played on a Wednesday, you'd imagine. All right, let's... that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. Thank you very much. And hopefully that goes some way to sort of remedying the... I suppose that was sort of negative, but I feel like our last episode, we were perhaps, for us, quite negative. And we received some feedback that we had like basically bummed people out, our loyal listeners, weren't massively happy with us, and we apologise. It wasn't our intention. Rosa, you put it nicely. We weren't being miserable. What did you say earlier?
I just said I think we were just a bit scared, and I feel like that's a totally different emotion. So yeah, but I didn't feel like we were too downbeat. But when my dad said to me that we'd like depressed him, I thought, oh, okay. Okay, time for a little bit of a reality check.
hopefully that opening little bit on Arsenal wasn't too miserable. I don't think it was miserable, just passionate. Let's keep the passion.
I think beefing with Burnley official social media.
Yeah, that... That's definitely not reasonable. That's just top class. Let's keep this energy to talk about Leicester and our 496th game against Chelsea of the season. So Leicester, much like pretty much everyone at the minute, it seems to have a sizable list of absences. So reportedly missing for the game against us are James Justin, Timothy Castagna, Jamie Vardy, I didn't know Vardy was out, Johnny Evans, Ricardo Pereira, Ryan Bertrand, Wesley Fofana, Bukari Samare, and then at AFCON are Kelechi Iheanacho, Wilfred Ndidi, Daniel Amati, and Nampales Mendy. So it's quite a, I mean, you could almost argue that they could get the game called off with that amount of people actually out. Just get, you know, one person with COVID and jobs are good, and they could get that one binned off too. It's a weird one because there's a lot of key players there that aren't playing, particularly up front. I guess they'll have to play Daka, who is a good player, but anytime we play Burnley and Vardy isn't there, I instantly sort of unclench a tiny bit because that prick scores against us nonstop. Is anyone, like, how are people feeling? I think we're going to win this game. I've got a feeling we're going to be sort of fired up from the weekend's injustice, sense of injustice. I think the Chelsea game was sort of a bracing exercise in where we are right now, but I think we're gonna go at Leicester, and I think we're going to win. Ash, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I think the same. I feel bizarrely, like, very confident about it, and I think if we're to get top four, we have to win this game, because I know we'll speak about Chelsea at the weekend in a minute, but that doesn't feel like, well, it's highly unlikely that we're going to get anything out of that. So, and I also think people have forgotten that, like, you know, under Conte in the league, like, we've been playing well. And I know that the Chelsea games were really poor, but they're, like, one of the best teams in the world. And, you know, not every team's gonna be that good. I think we'll be okay. I think we're gonna be okay. We'll get the points.
Billy, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I just want to reiterate what Ash just said there. I think like the mood around Spurs at the moment is a bit strange, and I think it was really upsetting to lose to Chelsea, and it always is, because, you know, they're rivals. And I feel like we want to, you know, our ambition is to get on their level, but they're champions of Europe at the moment. We lost them twice. The home leg, you know, we had some chances and stuff. It could have gone differently. And I feel like because of those two losses, everyone's a bit deflated. But before that, we've gone 8 games unbeaten in the league under Conte. So I feel like we just need another win to get us back into that mindset that we can actually finish in the top four. And I do think we'll do it. I hate playing Leicester. I think there can be a really good side on their day. But I think with those injuries that you mentioned, we don't really have any excuses. And then going into, you know, I'd be delighted if we managed to somehow get like 4 points out of them 2 games or something like that. Just spoil a draw against Chelsea and get out of there. But as long as if we beat Leicester, you can kind of go into that Chelsea game as a bit more of a free hit, hopefully. So I think it's huge on Wednesday. And I do think not playing Arsenal is really going to benefit us, because a lot of our players will look knackered. So it's just a couple of extra days rest. So yeah, I think it's a really good chance to beat them, to be honest.
Rosa, are we going to win?
Yeah, I agree with everyone, actually. I think we're going to win. I feel like Leicester are that team where I think, like, all of those absences are really going to affect them. I don't feel like Brendan Rodgers is in a place right now where he can kind of, like, get them kind of going, any, like, in spite of all of the injuries. Do you know what I mean? So I feel like we're going to win. And I think we might get a draw at Chelsea. I really, just based on nothing but just like a weird feeling, or maybe it's just because I feel like we can't literally lose to them 4 times in one season. But I also, like, Billy's right, you know, we're unbeaten in the league. They are champions of Europe. But we obviously also played those last 2 fixtures with an eye on the league as well. So playing them in the league is going to be a different proposition. And they are actually wobbling a bit at the moment. So actually, now's quite a good time to play them. And it's a good time, not having had to play the North London Derby probably, which, had that gone badly, could have really knocked us. But actually now we just don't have to think about it again for a little while. So I think get the win on Wednesday, and I think we're in a really good place the weekend. So yeah, I think actually 4 points is quite possible.
I think it's particularly possible if we do get one, or by some miracle, both of Dier and Romero back. For, I mean, it doesn't sound like Leicester is possible for either, but even just one of them back against Leicester, so that we have one sort of ball playing centre back that can play in that back three. Of course, Ben Davies is very good on the ball, but not having a sort of that Sanchez, Tanganga kind of, anytime they're on the ball, the terror that, you know, seems to hit us, and also the confidence I think it gives. And that was the thing that really struck me watching those Chelsea games, was the confidence and how comfortable all those Chelsea defenders were on the ball, where, you know, we had kind of the opposite. And I include the wing backs in that as well, with, you know, Doherty on the, you know, inexplicably playing on the left, and, you know, Royale sort of going through the troubling period that he seems to be going through. So if we can have some semblance of our sort of better team by having Dier or Romero back in, that would be, I think, huge for us. And I think we'd look like a much different team. No shade on Davinson. I feel like Rose's casting some side eye at me from across the Zoom. He can play on the right. That's absolutely fine. I just think Sanchez in the middle just sort of destroys so much of your build-up play. Ash, cut me off before Rosa cuts me.
No, I also as well, like, I know we weren't going to get into the previous Chelsea game, but we actually played okay and we created like a lot of chances. And if Emerson could cross and Kane had stayed on site, I don't know, who knows what might have happened, but
yeah,
created some good chances. So I think, like, yeah, if we can just play at that level again, like the second half, because I know everyone was really angry, but and thought that we didn't try, but I actually thought the commitment and the effort was like really good
in the second half.
I just think the quality was a bit lacking, but yeah, like, let's just get a couple of players back in and I think it'll be a really good game.
Billy, who would you play up with Kane and Lucas? Would you, and do you do you reckon he'll persevere with Lo Celso, or what would you do?
Yeah, I do think he will probably persevere with Lo Celso. I'd like to see, I'd like to see Skip start against Chelsea. Well, depends how he's going to manage the two games, to be fair. I think we'll see how Wednesday goes first, but I'd like to see Skip and Winks in the midfield again. Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens over the course of the two different games. I think for Chelsea, I'd definitely like to see Skip in there. I think we really missed him in the second leg. I think we really missed him in the midfield. And I just don't want to see Matt Doherty. Don't really care about anything else in defence. I just really can't have another game where I'm watching Matt Doherty play left back. I don't really care who else plays. I just can't have that again.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the worst. I feel like I say this everywhere. I'm not even going to bother. I really hope that, like, the Reggie's all right, by the way. I feel like I have some suspicion that maybe his injury is worse than Spurs have let on, because that's a few games he's not been there for now. Hopefully, Cesc, it would be lovely to see Cesc come to the fore in one of these matches. Hopefully, he can start against Leicester if Reguilón's not right, because, yeah, we can't do with Doherty at left wing back anymore. Anyone else anyone would want to see come into the team that perhaps wasn't around for the Chelsea games? Or, I mean, Skip obviously missed a second leg. I imagine he'll come back in. Brian, I thought, did really well in sort of little cameos in those Chelsea games. I wonder if, you know, it was maybe a leading question about Lo Celso. I asked you, Billy, perhaps Brian could step in if Conte thinks he's ready. Anyone up for a bit of Brian from the start?
Yeah, I do think, like, I've always been interested in Brian. I think he does some things which none of our other players can do. And I do think he's going to have one of those games. One day it's just all going to click for him. He'll, like, score an absolute world-class goal. And then I think he'll just find himself, get that. I think he's got a decent future ahead of him. And I would love to see it happen. And, you know, doing it against Chelsea would be a perfect time to do it, really. So, yeah, I would definitely, he's one of those names that I would never mind him being in the first 11, to be honest.
I watched a compilation thing of Harry Kane's performance against Chelsea in the second leg. And I don't know if it was just the sort of, like, stress / resignation I had watching that match, but I don't think I realised quite how well he played until I sort of watched it calmly back. He was really, really, really excellent. And I think it's a huge encouragement to see him, you know, spraying these balls around. I thought for the first time in a long time, he was, like, using his upper body to sort of muscle people off the ball and was stepping by people in a way that I've not really seen him do all season. Did anyone else feel like maybe actually finally, you know, all this way into the season that Kane might actually be back? Rosa, encouraged?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'll be honest. I didn't like give the second leg too much of my attention because I came through. I put the kids to bed and then, like, so I missed the first half and we were already 1-0 down. So I was just like, oh God, I'm just like, I'm going to watch it, but, like, not watch it. So I'm mostly just kind of going off what you guys have said, really. I think Ash, you said that it really looked like Kane was back, and I feel like, you know, we've had a couple of false dawns with him this season, but, you know, he's just too good for it not to happen again, right? We can't go, like, a whole season with the kind of Kane situation still kind of motoring along in like whatever gear. Like he, I don't think he will let that happen to himself. So I think, he will be back and he'll just start scoring. And he then kind of, and has scored, just unlucky really.
Yeah. I also feel like there was just a lack of quality around him. Like he was up against Rudiger, who's really difficult to play against and incredibly aggressive. And also a random wing back who I'd never heard of, who was amazing, which is just very Chelsea. But yeah, like, I don't know, just I sit like on in the west lower, like right next to the south stand, directly in line from where like Emerson put like 9 crosses in, none of which met a Spurs player. And you could just see, because I'm the fourth row in, you can just see like Kane's annoyance having to like just deal with Emerson like every 5 minutes. So we just need to surround him with better players and he'll score more goals. It's really simple.
Yeah. And sort of annoyingly, that's not really Lucas's strength either. Like he's not a creator at all. And, you know, he's been this kind of amazing battering ram for us when we've been so limited going forward in terms of dragging us up the pitch. But yeah, the sort of massive issue for me watching that game was like, who's creating for these guys? We've got two actually very good attackers still on the pitch, even without Sonny. But, you know, we're asking like Højbjerg and Winks and sort of whatever Lo Celso is at this point to be creating for these guys. Or, you know, two of the least creative wingbacks I think Conte could possibly ask for. So, yeah, hopefully some answers are found, maybe even by a transfer, perhaps. Which I think, Billy, you know, to your point, I guess part of the weird sort of funk that there seems to be around Spurs at the minute is also just down to the fact it's, you know, we're recording on the, what is it, the 17th. And, you know, we don't seem to be particularly close to signing anyone, you know, which, of course, in Spurs sort of Twitter land, there is nothing to rile supporters more than, you know, the prospect of signings not walking through the door. Quickly on that, are you guys still confident we are going to actually sign some footballers, or do you have is that sinking feeling starting to hit? Rosa, a shake of her head.
Like, I was absolutely convinced we were going to sign players because I was like, we can't go through a transfer window without signing anyone. But honestly, I am starting to get a little bit worried because there just don't seem to be, I mean, maybe I'm just not, you know, following the right people or whatever, but it sort of feels like there isn't even that much noise around it. So I don't know, maybe like they're working their magic behind the scenes and it's all gonna come out in like a week or something. But I'm starting to get that sort of like, oh my god, are Spurs really going to do this again feeling.
Okay, one down. Ash, confident?
I think we'll get someone in. How many?
I think one
at least, but we need 3 people. Like, well, we need 11 people, but we need like something just to keep this manager happy. Because I don't know, watching every press conference, every Conte press conference just has me on edge. And I just can't take like the next few months if he doesn't give him a couple players. So
yeah.
I think maybe Traore and one more, but like you said, we desperately need a midfielder that can actually create something. And it's going to be really hard to watch Eriksen play at Brentford or wherever else he ends up.
Why can't we just get Eriksen back? Like, why is he going to Brentford? What's the point of that? Like, no one's going to be happy with that situation. We're not going to be happy. Eriksen's not going to be happy. Like, okay, fine. Brentford fans, I'm sure they'll be happy. But this seems unnecessary, even for Tottenham.
I reckon that, and it seems to be the line that Spurs are after, a right wing back, a forward, and it was going to be a left-sided centre back, but Conte has changed his mind and has prioritised a central midfielder. So I guess that in terms of the issues we have with flogging players to create the space in the squad to bring in even those 3 players, that's challenging enough. So perhaps taking a bit of a punt on someone with the potential issues that Eriksen might have and touch every piece of wood in my house that there are no issues and that he makes a glorious comeback to football. I also wonder with Eriksen if he's like that sentimental. And I have always got the impression that he's quite a sort of pragmatic individual that doesn't have much truck with, like, you know, the sort of misty-eyed return. Billy and Ash's hands have both shot up. Ash, you were first. Go.
No, I was going to say, I've always thought that about Eriksen. I think when he was sort of trying to leave, I think before he even got to the club, he always sort of had this idea of this journey that his career was going to go on, and we were just a stepping stone in that. So, yeah, I don't think he, not that he doesn't care about Spurs, but I don't think he's as bothered as we might like to think he is.
Okay, Ash has slightly broken Rose's heart. Billy, are you about to trample on it further?
Yeah, a little bit maybe. I think it's in the All or Nothing, if I remember rightly, but I think it might be in that, or it might be in an interview that he did later, where he kind of mentions that he was like, he didn't have a go at Spurs fans, and I do think we do mean a lot to him. But I know there was that feeling where when he left, he was sort of talking about how the fans were sort of mixed in his last couple of seasons and sort of getting onto him a little bit. And I remember him, I can't remember the exact quotes or anything, but I do remember him saying, like, you know, people were starting to have a go at him in his last, like, career, last year at Spurs and stuff. And I do remember him saying something about Spurs fans in that way. So I don't know. Maybe he's not even pushing for the move back himself. Like, maybe he just doesn't want it. And I do hope, you know, it would be good to see him back again. I don't want anything but Newcastle for me is what I want for him. Like, I'll take Brentford if that's what it is, that's fine. He's not going to one of our rivals. He's not going to Newcastle. So I'd be quite happy him turned up at Brentford if he's not for us. If he wanted to come to us, I would sign him like instantly. Like, I think, you know, even if it's just like playing every now and then and then like an ambassador role for life, you know, I think he's one of our best ever players. I absolutely love the guy. But I think, like, I do agree with both of you. I think he's sort of just moved on from Tottenham now. I don't think he's the kind of guy to go back. So, yeah, I don't think it would happen. But, I hope he does well at Brentford.
Thanks, guys.
I hate you all.
I actually don't want him back, though. I love what he did, but I thought the last, like, year at Spurs was, like, by his standards, like, pretty poor. And I think, like, Spurs are one of those, like, the only clubs that seems to just, like, look backwards constantly with just, like, this sentimentality. And I'm just, like, sort of over that now. And I just want us to, like, look forward and buy a new Eriksen who's 21 or something.
Yeah, that is our classic move, isn't it? Like, we don't replace Bale, like, 11 years down the line or whatever. He comes back. We still haven't replaced him. He sells him again. We still haven't replaced him. It would be the same with Eriksen. Like, we sell Eriksen. We don't replace him. We get him back again. Like, you know, we have a history of, like, not replacing these players. I think you think about the players, I think Levy loves it, doesn't he? He loves, like, the return story. Like, we've done it with, like, Defoe, Keane, Bale, you know, all these players. I think it's quite a Tottenham thing, isn't it? But, you know, the return journey has never really gone that well for these players. It's never.
I can't believe you forgot Pascal Chimbonda.
Chimbonda, of course. But yeah, I don't know. I think Levy does like the return story, doesn't he? But who knows?
Yeah, I mean, Brentford's kind of perfect for him as well, right? I think Thomas Frank coached him when he was a teenager at Denmark international, or sort of junior level, and I read today that Brentford have 8 Danish players, which seems insane, but I guess the times wouldn't lie. I guess it's just like going to hang out with all of his international buddies or something. So it's kind of ideal. Still gets to live in London, sort of perfect, right? Billy?
Yeah, and just going back to transfers in general, like, I'm really worried about Vlahovic. For a number of reasons. One, I'm like terrified now that Arsenal are going to get him, and I didn't think that was possible at all. Like, all the noises coming out of Italy was he'd be like pretty much wants to go to Juventus, or if he could go somewhere else, it'd probably be Tottenham. But now it seems like Fiorentina are like pushing him towards Arsenal. And I think the problem for that for me is if you sort of read between the lines of Conte's quotes when he said Tottenham need another striker on Harry Kane's level, to me that's basically saying he really wants Dusan Vlahovic. So I'm worried that Conte's kind of ultimatum signing is that. And I kind of wonder, like, the optimist in me says that's the reason why we aren't doing anything, because we're just worried that we're going to have to put all of our eggs into the basket and, like, drop 70 million on him. And if you read all the reports on it, it sounds like his agent fees are going to be huge and his wages are going to be huge. And maybe we're just going to have to take it for Conte if that's what Conte has demanded. But I'm really worried that he's going to end up at Arsenal, which I think would be a blow, not only to us because it was a strength of our biggest top four rivals, but I think Conte would be really, really disappointed to that, because from reading him between the lines, Sounds to me like that's the transfer that he wants the most. And also, he's just scored an absolutely ridiculous goal for Fiorentina, so check that out as well. Like an amazing chip finish. And he also just missed a Panenka penalty in the same game. So I think he's going to be an unbelievable player for whoever signs him. But yeah, I'm really worried now that it's not going to happen.
He's 21, isn't he? It's insane. Like, he's absolutely terrifying. Ash, I know you've been on the Vlahovic train for as long as anyone I know. Do you think we've actually got a chance? I think our window's shut with him. I think it was last summer, but do you reckon we've got a shot?
No, I think it was last summer as well. I think he was probably like the Kane replacement, and I was really like on board after my initial like fury and like sadness. I was like fully on board getting rid of Kane and just like starting afresh. But he just can't go to Arsenal. Like, as long as he doesn't go to Arsenal, because like that's, like you said, he's 21. Even if like he stays there for a few years, they're going to get a ridiculous fee for him when he leaves. So I just can't see him down the road. That will just kill me.
Oof, let's maybe move this one on, because we're in danger of bumming ourselves out again. Rosa, anything to add before I move it on to more sentimental Spurs chat?
Nothing. I was just going to say, let's wrap this one up, because I don't want any more complaints.
Now, okay, let's move on to another former Spurs player who's had a good day as we record. Would love to wish Eric Lamela huge congratulations on winning the Puskás Award. The second consecutive player who was playing for Tottenham at the time they scored the goal to win that award. Of course, he won it in the most Tottenham Hotspur style possible in a losing effort in North London derby that he later got sent off in. And it got us to thinking, what glorious goals have Spurs scored in similarly losing, often tragic and occasionally pathetic circumstances? We wanted the hive mind on this, so we asked you guys on Twitter, and Christ alive, did this one touch a nerve. Before I get to the listener suggestions, throwing to you guys, which one spring to mind? Any goals in particular from Spurs defeats? Any magic moments? Billy?
Yeah, there's a couple, like the Gareth Bale hat-trick and the Inter Milan loss. Like, I think that was a moment that changed our club forever, changed Gareth Bale forever. And he's from that, he sort of springboarded into being like probably one of the top three players in the world. And another one, and I know it's not technically a loss, I know a couple of people said this in the replies as well, is the Kane mask goal. And like, that goal would go down as like my all-time favourite ever Tottenham goal. Like, the being in the stadium to experience that was unbelievable. But the fact that it was ended up in a draw, I know it wasn't technically a loss, but they had 10 men as well, and it was right in the title race, means I can sort of, I'm always disappointed looking back on that goal. So those would be my two, I think.
Were we all there for that goal on that day?
I actually wasn't there. I wasn't there for that game. I was watching with my dad and my brother.
It was so epic, Billy. Do you remember? It's just like, yeah, the heavens opened as well.
It was really weird, actually. Just like on the way in, like a police horse like trod on my foot and it like broke my toe. It's really random. But then when that goal went in, like all the pain for my foot just like disappeared. I was just like, I've never seen White Hart Lane go like that before. Everyone was like jumping over the seats and everything.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just, yeah, that is something I would never.
That was an unbelievable goal.
And like most best moments in Tottenham's history, it's like for nothing. Do you know what I mean? And that's why I think this particular question has had quite a big response on Twitter, because we love, like, that's the Tottenham way, isn't it? Like, looking back on these things that ultimately mean nothing.
It's such a beautifully sort of like, affecting way of putting the player of our club. Rosa, any goals spring to mind for you?
Yeah, I had a couple. Like, the Kane one was definitely up there. I remember Eriksen scoring against Juve in, like, the game itself was a draw, but like we lost the tie in like really pathetic fashion in Champions League. And it was like he hadn't scored a free kick for like years. And do you remember? And he like lined up to take it, and we were just all like, this isn't going to happen. Like, he hasn't scored a free kick for ages. And then he did, and it was unbelievable. And we were like, it's going to happen. We're going through. And that didn't happen. So that's what I really remember. But I think for me, like a recent, really iconic one has got to be Son's goal against Bayern. because we went 1-0 up that night through his goal. And I just remember thinking, this is unbelievable. What a night we're going to have. And then like 4 Serge Gnabry goals later, we're just like in the dust, just crying, depressed. And it was, what was it? So we went 1-0 up and then they scored like 5 goals and then Kane got a penalty and then they scored another 2 goals. So bleak.
Yeah, I can't remember if we got it back to 4-2 or 5-2, but
it was 5-2. I've not watched that goal since. I actually don't remember the goal itself. I just remember the feeling and thinking, this is unbelievable. We're going to do something really spectacular. And we kind of did.
I seem to remember it was like, and I might be completely wrong, but was it quite similar to the goal that Kane scored against Liverpool a few weeks ago where he got sort of slid in and then sort of played it across goal? It doesn't matter at all. It doesn't matter what that goal was like. That was one of the worst.
I remember. Like, you know, yeah.
It doesn't matter. Ash, tell me about your favourite pathetic goals.
The initial one that sprung to mind was Defoe against Arsenal, where he just like belted it in from
Arsenal. The 5-4.
Yeah. So that one sprung to mind. But the one that I saw someone mention, which I think is a much, much better goal, was Dele against Chelsea in the semi-final. And it's like the most incredible pass from Eriksen, which you can like, it's honestly, the assist is incredible. Like, you just have to watch it. And then I think Conte brought on Hazard and Costa and we just like wilted.
And then like Matic scores from 35 yards for the first time ever and our hopes and dreams were crushed. Yeah, one of those ones. I mean, that was like...
That game is another like, we're going to do it moment because we kept coming back. And then it was like, we're not going to do it.
We've had some, like I mentioned, we've had some really amazing responses to this. I'm just going to go through a few. So where do I start? So at Spurs Simpson says, Bale scored a blinder away to Man City when we lost. Can't remember the year. That was that awful game where Balotelli should have been sent off for stamping on, I think, Parker. And then in the last minute, I think Ledley brought him down or Ledley brought someone down and Balotelli scored a last minute winner. And we came back amazingly in that game. That one, Sandro against Chelsea, that one that he scored from sort of when Rafa did that lovely little pass over his head and then Sandro walloped it in before we then, I think, went on and lost 2-1. Ziga free, that was Stuart Andrews. So that one, James at JM S78 says the Ziga free kick, Man United 5-3. Jesus Christ, I mean, talk about iconic miserable matches. Yeah. The one that sprang to mind for me in a sort of recency bias thing, Shay at Shay THFC says Højbjerg versus Liverpool last season was a corker. At Connor G underscore E says Defoe head kick against United. Again, brilliant goal. The Defoe Arsenal one's come up a few times. Rafa's goal at Liverpool, says Jonathan Owen. Modric versus Bolton, which was another one that came up quite a few times, actually. A few people also said Pedro Mendes, 2005 against United, the sort of ghost goal wasn't given. Finished 0-0, but felt like a loss, says at VXB1. Freddie Canute versus Everton or Bale versus Stokes as Harry Grant. Chadley versus Stoke at home 2014-15 says Connor Anderson, volley from a ridiculous angle but we lost 2-1. Just trying to find some other ones.
A few mentioned the Eric Edmond one against Liverpool as well. That was an absolute banger, wasn't it? Like 45 yards or something.
Absolutely, yeah. I know our mate Tom Hayward had about 16. I'm just trying to find his tweet. Where are we with that? Tom's usually very good at iconic moments of Spurs misery. The masked Kane goal came up loads. Dele and Eriksen in the Chelsea semi-final. All sorts of goals. Tom Mitchell says Ginola versus West Ham, 98-99. Ginola versus Middlesbrough, 99-2000. King versus Man City, 2003-04. Pavlyuchenko versus Bolton, 2010-11. Oh, here's Tom's text. So Tom says, Defoe versus Arsenal. I think that's the 5-4. Defoe versus Man U, the overhead kick. Modric versus Burnley. Sandro versus Chelsea. Bale versus City, Chadli versus Stoke, Dele versus Chelsea, Dele versus United in 1920. Oh, that was that amazing one when Dele flicked it over his head at Old Trafford and then scored. And it looked like Dele was going to be back. And then he wasn't back. Loads and loads and loads of goals that Tottenham score when basically doesn't matter, which does kind of capture what supporting Spurs is all about. I could keep going, but I won't go on because some of them are just so upsetting that I think we'd all be here for hours sort of weeping. We don't want that. Right, let's move from sort of tragic Spurs events of the past to the most recent one. Spurs women drew 1-1 at home to West Ham on Sunday. It was a game that we were winning 1-0. West Ham were down to 10 men. And of course, in a sort of horribly Lanzini-esque finale, West Ham scored with one of the last, well, not kicks, headers of the game. Rosa, you watched it. How were we?
Yeah, it was just, oh, it was so unbelievably galling. But I think, as I said, at least my Sunday night kind of ended up in a similar fashion to how I always thought it might. Even though the North London Derby got cancelled, we were playing like really well, I thought. I missed most of the first half, but it seemed like we were kind of all over them, and then got a penalty. It was a West Ham player called Sissoko, so another Sissoko having a bad time at Spurs. She like conceded a penalty, which Rosella Ayan converted, and then like 2 minutes later, like a clumsy challenge on Jessica Naz, I think, got her sent off for two yellows. So that was all fine, all going totally swimmingly. We had quite a lot of chances, but just couldn't really finish. And I think that's again that's been the sort of problem with that Spurs team, just the sort of quality up front. But having said that, it looked like we were largely in control, and I thought there were some really excellent performances. I thought Jessica Naz played really well, and then when she went off, she was replaced by Addison, who I haven't really seen, but was so lively and was all over the place.
She was excellent, yeah.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with her. And then our Queen Shalina was obviously immense at the back. And Josie Green had another brilliant game, I thought. She seemed to be everywhere, just kind of sniffing out trouble. So it was so galling. I couldn't believe it. I was like, this is going to be fine. It's going to be fine. We'll see it out, even though we couldn't get the second goal. And then that was it, like 91st minute. And I think you and I had the same reaction, didn't we? Of just immediately just kind of swearing loudly and like it changing the channel.
It did underline to me that I definitely have crossed over from sort of, being aware of the Spurs women games and results to actually like genuinely caring. Like my response very much proved to me that I've crossed over from being sort of obviously caring about Spurs women, but now I like really care about Spurs women. And, them conceding a last minute equaliser will, as you say, Rosa, managed to sort of ruin my Sunday night. But like you say, loads of really good performances. I thought, to add to that, I thought Neville at right back again was excellent. I thought Rhea Percival covered every blade of grass and just seems to be exactly the sort of player you want in your team. Just need a goal scorer. Just, that chance that Tang had, particularly at 1-0, where someone with a bit more composure would have just sort of slid it under the keeper and finish the game, that perhaps, we seem to have sort of thrown a lot of strikers against the wall in terms of numbers. We've got quite a few options, but none of them quite there. But yeah, I think
maybe it's not going to be the season. Like I looked at the table and we would have gone second with that win, and now we're back in fourth, which is out of the Champions League places. And so, maybe without that striker, it's not going to happen this season. But that's not to say, I mean, although, still, who knows? But that's not to say it couldn't happen next year. I feel like playing really well, very solid. It's just that's missing.
And it's one step at a time, I think, with this team. They've come such a long way in such a short period of time that allowing these growing pains and, seeing them evolve sort of week on week, really, from the performances I've seen is something positive, even if and you have to put up with the odd last minute West Ham equaliser. Happens to the best of us Spurs women, don't worry. Let's move off Spurs and move on to our culture picks for this week. Billy, you go first. Tell me your culture pick for this week, mate.
Yeah, I went to the cinema last week and I saw a film called Titane, which is a French film. It's probably the most fucked up film I've seen in a very, very long time. I can't really describe too much about the plot because it is one of those things that if you're going to watch it, you have to like experience it without knowing too much about it. But it's about this girl who's in a car crash when she's younger and she gets a titanium plate put into her head. And then she sort of grows up with like an erotic attraction to cars. And then it gets weirder, only weird, much, much weirder from there. And this, the director, Julia Decore, her first film was Raw, which is like an amazing French horror film about like cannibalism. And this one is like equally messed up. But the violence in this film, I can stomach pretty much any violence on screen. But something about the violence in this film was like absolutely crazy. Like really could feel it in my stomach. Like, and the guy next to me in the cinema, I literally got up and left. It was like that bad, but it's an incredible, incredible film. So, Titane is called, and it's really, oh, really wow, worth checking out. But it's very hard to watch. It's like seriously violent.
Jesus Christ. That sounds terrifying, but I'm intrigued. Colour me intrigued.
Yeah, the fact that she has like erotic relationship with cars is not the weirdest part of the film, so that says a lot about it, to be fair.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll get to the cinema to see that one. But Ash, what's been turning you on this week?
So cars. Definitely not cars, but I'm like the biggest Kanye fan. So like him putting out a new song is like a massive moment of my week. So he put out a new record with The Game, which is amazing, produced by Hitboy and Premier, and just talks about all his recent love life and Kardashian related mess. But it got me really into going, this is an odd connection, but it got me really into watching all the Sunday Services back. And there's one that's incredible that he did at Howard University, which I like really recommend. It's just like an hour long, but it's really, really special. And I found it really calming to watch all these old, basically like Sunday Services. So Kanye world.
I finished watching the Kanye and Drake concert from, is it just before Christmas they did that? I've completely lost track of what it was, but I thought Kanye was like superb in that, and Drake was like awful, but Kanye was amazing. And yeah, if you've not watched that, it's on Amazon, I think, still. And it's like Kanye just like cycling through all of his biggest hits. And it's such a treat if you're even like vaguely sort of Kanye friendly. It's really good. But yeah, I never really got into Sunday Services. So I feel like maybe that's the sort of calming thing that I need to reintroduce. Mine is, so yeah, I feel like music-wise, nothing quite as yet has grabbed me in 2022 yet. So I'm not going to go anything music. We were in need of something a bit light to watch, which probably means that we're not going to watch Billy's film recommendation for a couple of weeks at least. But yeah, we were just looking for something to sort of chill us out before bed, and ended up watching Girls Five Ever, which is a sort of musical comedy created by Meredith Scardino, who is part of a sort of Tina Fey, Robert Carlock stable, worked on 30 Rock, Kimmy Schmidt. So if you are into that sort of comedy, it's exactly the sort of thing you'd be into. I mean, a lot of the characters are drawn from characters from those shows as well, but it's still excellent. It's about a sort of 90s girl group that had one hit before disbanding, or not disbanding, but just sort of collapsing into obscurity. And then they get a chance at a comeback when they're when their one hit is sampled by a hot new rapper. And it's very silly, set in New York. It's got, who stars in it? I made a note and I can't see it. Sarah Bareilles, Busy Phillips, Paula Pell, and Renee Elise, Goldsbury from Hamilton, who is absolutely amazing. And I cannot believe he's 51 years old. It's extraordinary to me. That woman has the most outstanding genes. It's just really funny. Half an hour, sort of very silly. Songs are really hilarious as well. And yeah, cheered me up this week. Rosa, last culture pick from you, please.
I've had quite a cultural weekend in the end. On Saturday night, I went to the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse, which is the theatre next to the Globe. My brother took me to see Measure for Measure, which was really fun. I've never been to that theatre before. I've been to the Globe a few times, and the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse is the indoor one, and it's like candlelit, which I was like, this is not a fire hazard, but you know, apparently they've got it sorted. So it was great. It's not super comfortable, but what they do, which they also do at the Globe, is they kind of zip through, like the productions are really kind of zippy and fast paced. So it was all kind of done in like 2.5 hours, including an interval, which was really fun. And then on Friday, I had an afternoon to myself and I finally went to see Spider-Man No Way Home, which just made me so happy. Like, I really, really want to talk about it properly with Billy on here, but I can't, like, there's just too many spoilers. So, but basically, like, I messaged Billy as soon as I got out, just being like, I loved it. And I think I can say this without it being too spoilery, that it's basically, I realise it's bookended by two appearances by actors from two of our favourite shows.
Yeah, because so I messaged you saying, nice, like, there's yeah. one specific thing that I need to speak to you and Ollie about. And I was like, as yeah. soon as you see it, you'll know.
And I knew it immediately. As soon yeah. as it came up, I was just like, that's it. And it made me so, so, so happy. So, I don't know, like, I've kind of got another, off the back of that as another recommendation, which is, like, Billy and I also listen to this other podcast, The Ringerverse, and there's two that are like for the sort of like geeks and Marvel heads, and one is The House of Art, which is like the deep dive. But I've also been listening to The Midnight Boys, which is the sort of instant reactions, and they're so fun to listen to as well. Like, if you're into any of that sort of comic book type stuff, they go really, really into it. They're like 2-hour podcasts, so you have to care, but I do, and they're just super fun.
Excellent picks all around. I really need to I think get into the Tom Holland Spider-Man film, not least because, being the tragic 38-year-old North London dad that I am, I have gotten into Euphoria really late and I'm now obsessed by it. So anything sort of anything Spurs fan, Zendaya related, I am massively into.
She's so cute in it as well. Like, she's so great. They're so lovely in it together. Yeah, you need to watch them.
I'm going to do it. I'm gonna convince Emily, my wife, that we need to get into it. Right, that is us done for this week. Thank you ever so much for listening. We covered all sorts of things there, so thanks for sticking with it if you managed to get to the end. And Billy, see us home, please.
Up the Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.